Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's Applicant Update webinar. I'm Nicole Davenport, new GTLD Communication Manager for ICANN. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few things. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 90 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Adobe Connect questions and comments pod. Questions submitted before the webinar will be addressed first, followed by phone questions, and then questions submitted online. Dial-in numbers can be found on the webinar page of the microsite at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The conference ID is Applicant Update Webinar. To enter the phone queue, dial star 1. To exit the queue, dial star 2. Please make sure that your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. Now I'd like to turn it over to Christine Ouellette, Vice President, GTLD Operations.
Good morning, everyone. This is Christine Ouellette. Thank you for joining us today for the new GTLD program update applicant webinar. I apologize for the delay in getting started. We had a few technical difficulties on our end. So we appreciate your patience. We will allow for some additional time on the back end of the webinar to make sure we have sufficient opportunity for questions and answers, so we won't cut the webinar short. Like last month's webinar, we're going to have the various members of the team who manage aspects of the new GTLD program speak to their respective functional areas. I will facilitate and turn it over to them as we go through. We're going to cover most of the many of the same topics we cover every month, but we're going to start off today with some recent developments. So in the last month, in October, most notably, significant progress has been made on name collision. The NGPC met and addressed name collision on the 7th of October. They adopted the resolution on managing collision occurrences. And on the 16th, we announced the implementation plan. And on the 18th of this month, we published the first alternate path to delegation reports, or what we're calling the SLD, second-level domain reports, out to applicants, and we publish them also on the ICANN website. This week, we have begun the transition to delegation for the first four registries, for the first four new GTLDs. These are the same four registries that signed the registry agreement back in July in Durban. They passed pre-delegation testing in August, and once the mitigation plan for name collision was accepted and reports were published, we've been able to take action to move those registries towards delegation. So from the program perspective, we provided those newly contracted parties with their tokens to proceed to delegation on Monday, the 21st of October. And the delegation process is currently underway and imminent. So it's been a big week for us. Probably more news on the horizon, but we will move on to an update on evaluation as well as contracting by Trang Nguyen.
Thank you, Christine. So in terms of evaluation, we're continuing to make good progress. Last month, we had a total of 20 applications that were still pending IE results. And since then, we were able to release IE results for 15 of those 20 apps. So right now, we are left with 5 apps that are still currently under or in IE. And we're continuing to work with the applicants to obtain the necessary information in order to complete evaluation for these 5 remaining applications. As for extended evaluation, we have a total of 38 applications that were eligible for EE. In the past month, we released EE results for 7 of the 38 applications. We've also issued CQs for the bulk of the remaining applications that are in EE. There are 7 applications that have not received CQs, and the reason is because of pending change requests. So we're continuing to make progress with regards to extended evaluation as well. And then the only other stat to update you on this slide is that since last month, we have had 1 new withdrawal, taking our total number of withdrawals to 122. Next slide, please. Moving on to contracting. For those of you who have read Christine's blog regarding the NGPC's resolution on GATCAT to safeguard advice and name collision and how they impact the contracting process, you know that the management of the contracting process has transitioned to me. For those who have not read it, I recommend that you read it. It provides some insight into our contracting process and gives a good summary of the resolutions. Since the transition, I've been working on implementing a new weekly contracting schedule that I'm going to cover in the next few slides. But first, I'm going to start by providing some contracting statistics. As you can see, as of today, we've sent out CIR notifications through priority 1300. The next batch of CIR invites will go out later today. Through priority 1300, 662 applications are eligible to begin the contracting process and have received a CIR invite. Of the 662 that have been invited to contracting, 183 have responded. That's a 28% response rate. Of the 183 that have responded, we've sent out 77 contracts for signature, and of those 77, 67 have executed. Next slide. I mentioned that the NGPC. Can you go back one slide? I think I missed it. Yeah. I mentioned that the NGPC recently passed resolutions on the GATCAT to safeguard advice and name collision. And these resolutions cleared the way for some applications to begin the contracting process. So on this slide, I've shared some contracting eligibility criteria that are now clear because of these resolutions. So in terms of GATCAT 2 advice and the resolution on that GATCAT 2 advice, the result of that resolution is that now we are able to extend CIR invites to those applicants who were previously on the GATCAT 2 advice list. Those applicants who have informed ICANN that they will not be operated as an exclusive access registry and the application is consistent with that intent have begun to receive CIR invites. With regards to registry agreement signing, applications that were previously in the uncalculated risk name collision category are now able to are now eligible to sign the registry agreement, and we have started to send out registry agreements to those applicants as of last week. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, the contracting process is moving to a weekly schedule. I've provided a daily calendar here that shows the various activities that are happening on each day of the week. So on Mondays is when we typically process any CIR responses that have come into us since the previous Monday. And Tuesdays is the day that we typically send out registry agreements to applicants for signature. Wednesday is the day where we send CIR invites out to those that are eligible. And then on Thursdays, that's our registry services agreement execution day. And on Friday, we post any registry agreements that we have executed on Thursday. I want to point out something here in that the if you've responded to a CIR invite on a Monday and we process it that Monday, it doesn't necessarily mean that we will be sending out a contract for your signature the following day on Tuesday. There are many steps that have to take place and happen once we receive the CIR invite. So I'll go over in more detail what those various steps are on the next slide. If an applicant sort of respond right away when we send our CIR invite, the cycle time is about a 15-day between when a CIR invite is sent out to when an applicant can expect a registry agreement to be sent to them for signature if they respond right away to the CIR invite. We've also received a lot of questions about how priority number plays into the contracting process. And, you know, I just want to reiterate that we have always and are continuing to use priority numbers to process applications for contracting. So with this weekly schedule, what that means is that on every single day of the week except for Friday, the posting day, we are using priority number to determine which CIR responses to process, which RAs to send out for signature, you know, who's eligible to receive a CIR invite, as well as who's eligible for contract executions on Thursday. So at each one of these steps, we look at all of the applications that are in our queue and then process that queue by priority number. Next slide, please. So this is a little bit of a deeper dive into the RA preparation process that I mentioned on the last slide. So upon receipt of a CIR response, the first step that we do is we review that CIR response and ensure that all of the required requested information is has been supplied. If they have not, then we have to do certain follow-up with the applicants to obtain the necessary information. If all of the information has been provided, then that application moves into the next queue, which is the substantive review queue. In that queue, what we do is take a more detailed review of all of the information that's been submitted, such as if you've submitted a code of conduct exemption request, for example, or if you indicated that you have additional registry services that you would like to provide. So a more substantive review of all of the documents that you have provided. Once that review is complete, then the application moves into the next queue, which is essentially the preparation of the actual registry agreement itself and any other, you know, relevant material such as Exhibit 8 or Specification 11 or Specification 12. Next slide, please. I think a couple of weeks ago, we posted an announcement that essentially announced that in order to comply with the NGPC's resolution regarding name collision, a required change had to be made to the registry agreement. The link to that announcement is on this slide here if you'd like to take a look at the full announcement. Essentially, since that announcement, we have notified all of the registry operators that we have signed registry agreements with. And as of last week, we started to send out registry agreements for signatures with the new Specification 6. There is no action required on any of the registry operators' part. The Specification 6 modifications will be seamlessly incorporated into the registry agreement, and all of the registry agreements that we've signed with the old Spec 6 will be updated with the new Spec 6 in the coming weeks, and applicants will be or registry operators will be notified once that update has been made. Next slide, please. code of conduct exemption. Last Friday, we also posted an announcement that the code of conduct exemption process and request form have been finalized and are ready for use. So what this means is that if you are currently in the contracting process and have received a CIR invite, if you would like to request the code of conduct exemption, you can attach the completed code of conduct exemption request form and your TOD's complete registration policy with the CIR response. If you have already signed a contract with ICANN, a registry agreement with ICANN, and would like to request a code of conduct exemption, what you can do is you can email your request to the Customer Service Center at newgtod@icann.org. and attach the completed code of conduct exemption request form as well as your TOD's complete registration policy. So I believe that is it for me. Now Russ is going to speak to you about pre-delegation testing and transition to delegation.
Thanks, Trang. We can go on to the next slide here. So pre-delegation testing status-wise, overall, things are moving well, very well in pre-delegation testing. You'll see the graph on the left depicts the status, or on the right, sorry, depicts the status of the various applications engaged in the process. We've distributed results to 13 of the participants so far that have completed pre-delegation testing. All have been fully successful, a pass on pre-delegation testing. And we're getting ready to distribute the next group of results to the applicants tomorrow. That should be another 16 applications progressing through the process. And then we have another group lined up for the following week and so on. You can see that by us releasing 16 this coming week, we've now started scheduling up to the full 20% capacity that we currently have and have the ability to increase capacity should demand dictate in the future. But currently we're operating under capacity. We have we haven't booked a full 20 per week yet, only because demand hasn't necessitated it. Moving on to process and product improvements, we posted updated resources on September 26th, so you'll see some new input templates and minor changes to specifications. All the changes were made to clarify questions that we had been getting about the existing specifications and correct a couple minor errors, but nothing, in my opinion, that changes the requirements of what it takes to pass pre-delegation testing. Additionally, in that update, we announced that the long-awaited EPP self-test tool is now active as of October 1st. You can find the link to that tool on the FAQ on the PDT microsite. We recognize that churn in the documents creates a lot of work on the applicant side, and we're doing our best to minimize the churn to these documents. But when we do find issues that need correcting, we'll batch them together and make changes accordingly. We had a good call with the NTAG on, I think it was late September, early October. I don't remember the exact date, but we had a good call with the NTAG where we talked through potential process and product improvements to the PDT. One thing I wanted to stress is we are working to find ways to continue to be efficient and reduce the cycle times where possible. We're getting ready to we'll probably have some things to talk about in Buenos Aires related to cycle times and demonstrating repeatable cycle times that everyone can expect when they'll get scheduled, when data entry needs to be completed, when testing starts and ends, and when results are published. So from a start to finish, you'll be able to see kind of the whole cycle laid out for you. So just wanted to stress that we're working to continue to make it as operationally seamless as possible from going from contracting all the way through to transition to delegation process. Next slide. Transition to delegation process. As we mentioned in the opening, we're now operational in this process. So the first four delegation tokens were provided to the registries on Monday. And you'll see a change to the graphic below from last month, and that's based on the implementation of the name collision occurrence mitigation plan. So previously, the only prerequisite to continuing on to the transition and delegation process was completion of pre-delegation testing. As we're rolling out the implementation of the name collision occurrence plan, we've inserted the publishing of the alternate path to delegation report as a prerequisite to transition to delegation, and that's why we had the hold between those that passed in August and just getting them started on the transition to delegation process last week. So we're gonna be catching up with publishing those alternate path to delegation reports as we get them in the order as people come out of PDT. So we'll work through to try and minimize any further delays by getting them caught up as quick as we can as people come out of PDT. We'll publish them in batches. But we hope by the time Buenos Aires to have all of the reports published so we can remove this as a gating factor. Cyrus will talk more about the implementation of the name collision plan later in the presentation. And from what we think so far, the whole process, the transition to delegation process, should occur in less than 5 business days, and probably less than that. So with that, I'll pass it over to Christina to talk about objections.
Thank you, Russ. Good morning, everyone. On this first slide, we have a status update on the outstanding admissible objections. As you can see in the chart, of the 263 admissible objections, 108 are still in progress. The applicant has prevailed in 101, the objector has prevailed in 15, and 39 have been terminated. Next slide, please. The next slide provides some information on the timing of the determinations. We've broken it down here by dispute resolution service provider. For the legal rights objection, since last month's webinar, determinations have been rendered and published for all applicable cases. For the string confusion objections, we have 12 cases that are still in progress, and we anticipate that almost all of these will be complete within the next month. For community and limited public interest objections, the majority of the proceedings are still in progress. The extended timelines may be due to several factors, and the primary factors that we've seen are when either one or more of the parties request a stay of the proceedings, or when the expert panel requests an extension to review the materials that have been provided by the parties. Additionally, I'd like to note that since the last webinar, we began publishing determinations on the new GTLD microsite. They're scheduled to be published on a weekly basis, and you can access them through the link that we've provided on the slide. That's it for objections today. I'll turn it back to Christine for an update on GAC advice.
Thank you, Christina. So as Trang mentioned, as part of the contracting process on GAC advice, the NJPC has taken action on the Category 2 safeguards. And in particular, applicants who have applied for TLDs on the Category 2 list, we issued queries to the applicants in August asking if they still intend to operate on an exclusive basis. 139 applicants in total. This is the current statistics. We had slightly different numbers a few weeks back, but as of today, we have 139 applicants who have stated they do not intend to operate exclusive access registries, nor does their original application indicate that they were going to operate exclusive access registries. Therefore, those applicants are now eligible to be invited to contracting, presuming all other criteria, eligibility criteria for contracting are met. Most of those strings are actually in contention, or objection. So there are other reasons. Some of those 139 are not being invited, but they are eligible from a Category 2 safeguard perspective. The 35 applicants have indicated that they do not intend to operate exclusive access registries. However, their initial application did indicate that their registry operation would be exclusive. So these applicants have been asked via the Customer Service Center. They were asked to submit change requests, formal change requests, to modify their application to indicate as such. Once those change requests are submitted, processed, approved, then those applicants would also be eligible to be invited into contracting. Finally, we have 12 applicants that have indicated they do intend to operate exclusive access registries or were non-responsive. Those applicants are not eligible to be invited into contracting. And you can see the link there to get more information on that. The NGPC has also addressed outstanding issues from the Beijing and Durban communiques. The first four TLDs listed there are eligible to proceed through evaluation, but based on GAC advice, we will not be proceeding to execute a registry agreement until we get more direction from the GAC. The second bullet, Wine, Van, and Amazon, as well as the related IDN versions of those strings, are still under consideration by the NGPC. The NGPC is also continuing discussions with the GAC regarding IGO protection and IGO acronyms. And the NGPC is working on an implementation plan for the GAC Category 1 safeguard advice. So those are the outstanding items from both the Beijing and Durban communiques. I will turn the microphone over to Dana King, GTLD Operations Director, to update us on the Trademark Clearinghouse.
Thank you, Christine. As you can see from the slide, the abused domain name label service has launched. This service allows rights holders to register up to 50 abused labels related to a verified trademark record in the clearinghouse. Those labels must have been the subject of a determination in a prior UDRP case or a court decision in which the rights holder prevailed. The TMCH validator, facilitated by Deloitte, will examine former and current ICANN-approved UDRP provider database information as well as court case documentation to ensure that each label that's been submitted meets the criteria. After validation has occurred, labels will be added to the list of domain name labels subject to the claims process. Information from the MARC record plus the information regarding the UDRP or court case will be included in the claims notice for that particular label. Access to the OT&E of the TMDB continues. Any ICANN registrar may request access to the test environment, even those that have not yet signed the 2013 RAA. Instructions are at the link that you see on the slide. Registries under RA as well as back-end registry service providers are also able to access the OT&E. To date, we have issued 50 tokens to registries, 72 to registrars, and 22 to registry service providers. Requesting certification that a registry has or registrar has completed all testing may be done by submitting an email to IBM. Instructions on how to do that are on section 3.2, page 7 of the document that you see referenced there. The link has been included. The IBM webinar series continues tomorrow. Their focus tomorrow will be on the abused name label service and its impact on claims. Next slide, please. We have some updated statistical information showing that 13,689 trademark records have been submitted across 94 jurisdictions. And you can see the breakout of the ASCII labels versus the IDN labels in that slide. I will pass the microphone over to Cyrus to discuss name collision.
Thank you, Dana. Hi, everyone. This is Cyrus Namazi. As Christine mentioned earlier, October is gearing up to be a very monumental month, I think, in the history of ICANN and our community. Earlier in the month, on the 7th of October, NGPC approved a plan that was proposed by the staff in regards to mitigating name collision occurrences and their impact. As a result of it, with the exception of Home and Corp, all the other strings essentially were freed up that were held up as a result of the name collision issues to move forward with the contracting process. The staff's proposal consisted of building a framework for managing name collision occurrences, and we're actually very busy right now putting the bits and pieces of that together and hope to be presenting that to the community for input and feedback in Buenos Aires. Alternatively, and in parallel, we've actually come up with a proposal that has also been approved that essentially allows an alternate path to delegation by blocking the SLDs that are queried in the historical data of 2006 to 13 of Day in the Life of. And in fact, the four applications that were mentioned earlier in the webinar have elected that path and moved forward with blocking those SLDs toward delegation. We also have begun compiling a guide to mitigation study that we'll be making available again for public comment and input. We'll be making that available to all the ISPs, IT managers, equipment vendors to help them identify occurrences of name collision and with mitigation steps that they could take. The SLD list is in the process of being compiled. We already obviously published them for the first four IDN strings, and we're working hard to actually complete that transition to the other strings. We hope to have that completed by Buenos Aires, but I think we're going to be able to do that even before then. The reporting of the SLD list will be actually published in groups so that we actually minimize any delays that could be caused in delegation. But as I mentioned earlier, the complete list should be available to everyone before Buenos Aires. Next slide, please. I'll hand it over to Russ now.
Thanks, Cyrus. So now we'll talk about contention set resolution. And first on that is a CPE, or Community Priority Evaluation. So back since the last webinar, we were able to publish the CPE panel's guidelines. That was on September 27th. And on October 9th, we sent out the first two invitations to begin the CPE process. And we're expecting evaluation to begin later this week for those first two. The evaluation process is expected to take between 2 and 3 months to complete, depending on if clarifying questions are needed, if the panel feels they're needed. We'll be doing assessments of eligibility on a weekly basis, and as people become eligible, we'll be sending the invitations on that weekly cadence. You can monitor the invitations as they go out and the status of the evaluation on the CPE micro page of the microsite. We'll be updating that along with the eligibility on a weekly basis as necessary. Additionally, we'll be publishing an FAQ onto the microsite in the coming days. That should help people with any questions they may have about the process. And if those don't answer it, you can always submit a case through the customer portal. Next slide. Now move on to the ICANN auctions, the mechanism of last resort to resolve a contention set. As we talked about last month, we contracted with Power Auctions to be an auction provider on behalf of ICANN. That getting them in place was a little bit delayed from what we had anticipated or desired, but we're happy to have them on board as they were instrumental in helping us design the auction process for the applicant guidebook. So we already have a leg up in terms of comfort and scope there. So we've been coordinating with Power Auctions over the last month and a half or so to get this going and are making progress towards operational readiness. We're not as far along as we had hoped to be based on the last webinar's announcement. We're still working on finalizing the auction rules, and Power Auctions is making good strides with customizing the auction online auction system for contention set resolution auctions. And we're finalizing an agreement with an escrow provider who will use to handle all the financial transactions associated with the auction. So bidding deposits and winning payments will go through an escrow provider. There's a great deal of legal documentation that we're working on that we're working as hard as we can on and as fast as we can on, but trying to make sure we get it right so it's not a number of iterations coming through the pipeline. And we're looking to do an auction-focused webinar in the first week in November. I'm not sure if we picked a final date for that, but should be coming out pretty soon. You'll get information on that. And likely going to try and make that webinar a collaborative working-type session. We recognize there's a lot of questions out there, and there's a lot of things that we want the community's input on. We don't want to just arbitrarily make decisions that we think are in the best interest. We want to hear from the community and try and make decisions together to resolve these contention sets. And then with the named collision occurrence management plan rolling into effect, there is some impact on contention set eligibility for auctions, and we need the alternate path to delegation reports published before we consider anyone eligible, any TLD eligible for an auction. We just think that's the right thing to do because it may impact people's valuation and bidding decisions. So that's all I have for auctions. I think we'll turn it back to Christine to close us out.
Thanks, Russ. Thanks to the entire team for your presentations. We're going to move to a Q&A portion of the webinar. Thank you to everyone who submitted questions in advance. We got several dozen questions, very robust and helpful. We did take those questions into consideration as we built our presentation, so hopefully we've been able to address some of those questions. What we're going to do is we will go follow the sequence of agenda items for the webinar as we answer Q&A. So we're going to start with the evaluation and contracting will go in the sequence of the webinar agenda. If you could bear with us for 1 minute as we transition to the Q&A format. Thank you. So it doesn't look like we have any questions on evaluation, so we'll go directly to contracting questions. Trang usually facilitates these. Do you want to ask and answer your own questions, Trang?
Yes, I'll do that. There's some that are others I think can provide input here. The first question comes from Alex. Are contracts being prepared and being signed out in the order that CIRs were returned, or to the lowest priority number for which CIRs have been returned? So as I mentioned, we're processing by priority number. So what that means is each Monday we look at the queue of the CIR responses that we've received in the past week and process them by priority number. Those CIR responses that are complete are moved to the next queue, the substantive review queue, and those that are incomplete and requires follow-up with the applicant will remain in the CIR response queue. And then once we have the complete information for that CIR response, then it gets pushed into the substantive review queue. And then when we look at the substantive review queue, we process applications by priority number in that queue. So everything is by priority number. Next question, also from Alex. Why are 20 contracts or more not being sent out per week? Will they soon be sent out at this rate? So the rate at which we send out contracts for signature depends on a number of factors, including the number of CIR responses that we get back, the completeness of the information provided, and also eligibility criteria must be met, eligibility criteria such as name collision rating having a compliant COI. They're not gating factors for receiving a CIR invite, but they are gating factors for having a registry agreement sent out for you for signature. So with the NGPC's resolution and the name collision rating, we are starting to be able to release more registry agreements out for signature. This week we released 16 contracts for signature that went out yesterday. So we're working toward, releasing up to 20 contracts as promised. Yes, and we could actually exceed the 20 contracts that we send out for signature each week as well. So we're working towards that. I went through, there's a question on priority number and how that's being used to process applications that are in the contracting queue, and I've answered that those questions during the presentation, and I've just answered a question around that as well. But let me just give an example that hopefully will clarify things for folks. Say if you have priority application with priority number 5 sign a contract this week, and priorities number 1 through 4 have not been invited to contracting because they were not eligible. Priority number 5 will be invited into PDT the following week because they signed a contract this week. We are not going to hold up priority number 5 because priority number 1 through 4 have not been eligible. In terms of moving on to the next steps, it's based on priority number that are currently in that queue. Next question comes from Irene. As far as we are concerned, ICANN has stated that applicants have up to 9 months to execute a contract from the date of issue of the CIR notice, plus an additional 9-month extension request that can be filed in case you can demonstrate that you are working diligently and acting in good faith. However, the wording of the CIR notice appears to be somehow contradictory. This invitation would not be considered the notification date per Section 5.1 of Module 5. Is there any contradiction? Are we wrong in any of these dates? I don't know if Krista or Alan, you can answer this question.
Thanks, Trang. This is Krista Papik from the Registry Services team. So the language in the CIR is correct. The reason that we are not managing to the 9-month window at this time is because applicants wishing to sign the registry agreement now are also needing to sign the supplement agreement that goes along with it. And by triggering the 9-month window now, we would be putting those that don't want to sign the supplement at a disadvantage. So we're not triggering that window as of yet. I think a follow-on question that we get this one quite often is, when would we trigger the nine-month window? And once we get to the point where we're no longer needing the supplement or using the supplement, we would then trigger that nine-month window, and applicants that are actively still in contracting would get a notification letting them know that.
Thanks, Krista. Next question is from Vincent. Does ICANN accept additional registry services to be added after execution of registry agreement? If yes, what is the procedure? Krista, do you want to take that as well?
Thanks, Trang. This is Krista again. For registry operators, actually, if they're already contracted with us, for registry operators wishing to add additional services once they've executed a registry agreement, there is the RSEP or RSEP process that's posted on ICANN's website on the registries page. That process requires evaluation by ICANN, but you can easily access that on the website and see what the entire process is. And if you wanted to add additional services, just follow that process, and it'll be dealt with as outlined.
Thanks, Krista. Next question is from Jessica. Can you give us some insight into when the red lines of signed contracts will be available? So let me take that. We have already started to provide or post red lines of the signed registry agreements as of last week. For those that we've signed without posting the red lines, we're going to go back and post the red lines for those in the coming weeks. We understand that people are asking for this, and we'll try to get them out, but we just need to get caught up. Yes. Next question is from Glenna. In the RA, I can change certain time periods from business days to calendar days in its registry agreement. Has ICANN considered what happens if a calendar day falls on a holiday such as Christmas?
I'm looking at our legal team, but maybe we can have them take a look at this question and then provide an answer back in the Q&A, that document that will get posted after the webinar. Next question, what is the process for a registry operator to seek approval to conduct a registration program not otherwise permitted by the TMCH requirements under Section 4.5.2?
Hi, Trang. It's Krista again. I'll take that question. We're working on developing a process for that. It's still under development, so we don't have an answer to that quite yet. But once we do have the process, we'll make sure everybody knows what it is. It gets, that it gets submitted. It gets posted and thank you.
Thanks, Krista. Kristen, that's it. Follow up the questions on contracting. Should I move to pre-delegation testing?
Yes. So we'll Russ will also ask and answer his own questions. Do you want to do that or? Okay.
Yeah, I only see one question in here from Lillian Fosteris. Is ICANN planning to publish the results of PDT and the list of delegated strings as they occur? We know that ICANN posted an announcement when the first applicants passed PDT, but haven't seen anything since. Yes, we did announce the first time kind of as a milestone, as we've been doing with all kind of new steps in the GTLD program. The first time something happens, we make a bigger deal out of it than the subsequent times. We didn't originally intend to post the PDT results, but we are working on updating the application status page that will reflect the status of applications as they matriculate through the GTLD program. We'll revisit this and think through if we want to publish actual pass, not pass results. Related to the delegation list of strings as they get delegated, yes, we're working on putting something together on the microsite that will reflect the delegation status.
Okay, so in terms of objections and dispute resolution, we didn't have any questions submitted about that previously. Okay, GAC advice next. You have some questions for me?
Yes, I have lots of questions for you on GAC advice. First question from Lillian. With regard to the GAC category to safeguard advice, what bar will ICANN employ to determine whether a registry qualifies as seeking exclusive access, and how will ICANN communicate minimum requirements to applicants?
So, thanks, Trey. So the answer would be based on their response to the inquiry we sent out in August to follow up on the NGPC's consideration of GAC Category 2. All applicants who have applied for strings named in GAC Category 2 advice were sent a query asking if their application stated they were exclusive and if they intend to be exclusive based on the parameters and the details outlined in Spec 11 of the registry agreement. So it's based on the applicant's statements and assertions to that inquiry. And then since Specification 11 prohibits exclusive access registries for generic terms, as long as the applicant is willing and signs the registry agreement with Spec 11 as is, then they're prohibited from not complying with the GAC Category 2.
Thanks, Christine. Next question, also from Lillian. When does ICANN plan to publish its analysis and proposal for the NGPC for applicants that do intend to offer exclusive access?
So the NGPC is still taking under consideration how to process and handle applications that intend to be exclusive as named. There is GAC advice on that. So it's not for staff to propose anything at this point. It's under consideration by the NGPC.
Thank you. Next question, also from Lillian. At what stage and through what mechanism does ICANN plan to address the Category 2 safeguards for those applications that were not specifically referenced in the GAC's communique?
So the Category 2 doesn't have explicit safeguards. Category 1 does. So Category 2 is about exclusive access. So we are pursuant to the NGPC's request for information for their consideration. We have taken action with those applicants who applied for the strings named in GAC Category 2. We have not extended that inquiry further. But Specification 11 and the parameters of exclusive use apply to anyone who's signs the standard registry agreement.
Thanks, Christine. That was the last question on GAC advice.
Okay, and do we have questions on Trademark Clearinghouse? Okay, Trang, if you'd ask those, and we'll see who can respond.
Well, do we have a lot of questions on the Trademark Clearinghouse and rights protection mechanisms? The first one is from Karen. Karen Kent, can you confirm that GTODs that have designated themselves as geographic TODs are able to avail themselves of either the qualified launch program or approved launch program options set out in 4.5.1 and 4.5.2?
So, Karen, I don't think we have an I don't have an answer for you at this time. Our resident expert is Karen Lentz is not present today. We will be publishing an FAQ on the 19-page rights protection mechanism document. We anticipate publishing that in the next few days, and we will make sure that this type of question, specifically about the geographic names applications, are is addressed in the FAQ.
Thanks, Christine. There are several more questions with regards to the rights protection, the RPM document, and specific sections within it. So I'll skip over those questions for now.
So that's fine. The other thing I would highlight, and Cyrus, I'm not sure if you're still on the line, but there is a plan to have a webinar specifically on the rights protection mechanisms and the document in November, the first week of November, Pride of Buenos Aires. So we'll be publishing the FAQ shortly, and then we will have a webinar so we can have a more interactive dialogue about the document and some of the legal specifics. It's a very it's part of the contract, so it's a legal document. But we'll have the right parties there to engage on those questions.
Thanks, Christine. Next question comes from Vincent. If Apply for String is not intended to open to the public, is Sunrise Phase is Sunrise Phase needed for the registry?
So a closed registry, I'm assuming that the question is about a registry that intends to operate in a closed manner, perhaps a brand. So, yes, all registries must abide by the RPM in the document, specifically must offer Sunrise to trademark holders.
Interesting. Next question also from Vincent. What if a reserved word listed by the registry and a trademark registered in the TMCH are identical match? Which one prevail?
Yeah, so sorry. I don't have an answer for you on that one. We'll have to look into that and get back to you. We'll follow up in either our Q&A follow-up after this or in the FAQ.
Thank you. Next question from Glenna. Under the terms of the service agreement for registries and registrars for access to the Trademark Clearinghouse, does ICANN consider a subcontractor who accesses the Trademark Clearinghouse on behalf of its client, the registry operator, a user under the Trademark Clearinghouse or otherwise covered by the terms of use?
Yeah, we will. We need to follow up and get the appropriate response on that. So let me follow up after the webinar. So I think we have a number of very detailed questions specifically on Trademark Clearinghouse and rights protection that are we're probably not in a position to answer today. We will make sure that all of these questions get folded into the Q&A follow-up from this webinar so we can get answers to as many of those as possible. So thank you. We will not be disregarding the questions. Thank you. Name collision, shall we move on to name collision? Actually, how about, do we have any questions on community priority evaluation or options?
Yeah, we have a couple of questions on auctions from Vladimir. In what order are you going to put eligible contention sets into the auction invitation pipeline? Are you going to take the lowest priority number for each contention set that is eligible for the auction? Yes, that's right. I think we talked about it last month as well. We're going to, as contention sets become eligible for auction, we'll select the ones with the lowest priority numbers first and move those through the invitation and scheduling process. The next question is, how many contention sets are you planning to put into the pipeline per week? The system is capable of performing multiple auctions at a time. I think that's a question we might be able to better answer at the upcoming webinar, and probably something we even want to talk through with the community to help get a better understanding of different sensitivities to scheduling. And then the ultimate question was trying to get an estimate of when particular auctions will occur or will be invited. And like I said, I think we're a little too immature at this time to be able to provide that answer. But we know that's a key question that people want answered, and we're working towards a way to answer that question.
Okay. Let's see. I think we now have a couple of questions on name collision. Russ, do you think you want to ask those questions? I think Cyrus might be on the line to answer them.
I am, Christine.
Sure. So, Cyrus, I can go ahead and ask, and then you can answer. This one's from Rubens Cole. What day in the life study or studies will base the creation of the interim block lists? Is it 2013 only 2012, a combination?
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Ruben, for the question. It is the 8 years of 2006 to 13 day in the life of data.
Great. Next one. What happens if either the interim block list or the final block list for the TLD contains mandatory names like Nick, WWW, or who is?
Right. Only Nick actually is the mandatory one that's required for activation, and it will not be included in the SLD list.
Right. I think there's a provision in Spec 6 that allows Nick
that's
as
right.
well. This one's related to the risk analysis. Will the risk analysis for all strings be done concurrently and published at a single time, or will they be incrementally published in priority number order?
Right now, we're actually publishing them incrementally just because we're really starting up this engine, this analysis. Shortly, we'll be caught up, and before Buenos Aires, all of it will be published together.
I think that covers the bulk of the name collision questions. There's a lot of similar questions to that.
Okay, great. So anything we haven't addressed that we got previously, we'll make sure to get into the FAQ. Now we're going to segue. We've got about half an hour, given that we started late. So we're going to go to the phone lines, and we have a few people in the phone queue.
Our first question is from the line of Constantine Russin with Dot Music. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Constantine. Thank you for having us. I have a quick question on the issues of, again, the community objections and GAC advice, and also the positions of certain applicants that have changed their positions from exclusive access to not being exclusive access, or even an applicant that was exclusive access who said that they were not on exclusive access in the first place. So my question is, has ICANN provided these material changes to the community objection panelists, since these were submitted by these applicants during the proceedings? And secondly, what happens if these objections are not upheld while the applicants have made material changes that ICANN seemingly seems to allow at this point? Does that mean people applying for CPE can make material changes as well to serve their purpose? So that's my question. And also, can there be a reconsideration and appeal to ICANN if these objections are not upheld based on not following the rules on material changes? Thank you.
Thank you, Konstantinos. This is Christine Ouellette. I recall that you submitted a similar inquiry either to customer service or through correspondence. And I believe that our response was that ICANN is not in a position to provide information to ICC panelists. And it's the objector and the applicant or respondent who provide information to the objectors for their consideration. So if there's additional information that you as an objector would like to submit to the panelists, that would be something that you could contact the ICC to do. But ICANN is not in a position to submit such information.
Right. The issue is, per the rules, you can't really submit decisions. I mean, the discriminations were pretty much met. The NGPC made decisions on the GAG 2 advice saying generics exclusive access are not allowed. This was like 2 weeks ago. And, you know, all we're wondering is if, you know, if the panelists, we did send a letter to the judge, to the panelists as well, and they pretty much said it's, we already made our determinations. So that's, and you can't be submitting, you know, they said that they're not, you know, submitting additional information after, which even though it's so relevant, is not per the rules, supposedly, at this point after they made the determination. So that's our questions. I mean, there's too many changes going on, and we're really, you know, we're concerned about what's going on here with the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Konstantin. We have one more question on the phone.
Our next question is from the line of Michael Pelage with Ferris Global. Please go ahead. Sir, your line is open. Please check your mute button.
Thank you. This question is for Christina with regard to objections. In providing the statistics on objections, you were providing those applications which had been rejected. My specific question is, when will that be reflected in the status update regarding that application? Because when you go and you look at those applications which have been denied, it has not yet been reflected or does not appear to be reflected. And if you look at the statistics from the last month, there's only actually been one withdrawal, which I think was in connection with another application, but there were, in fact, a number of ICC decisions in which applications were rejected. So could ICANN shed some light on how those will be communicated to the community?
So, Michael, this is Christine Ouellette. So we do have an objection determination page on the new GTLD wide growth site in which we are publishing all of the determinations. So that would be the primary location in addition to each DRSP's pages, websites that publish their own information. But for ease of use and to have all of the information in a single place, we have our own objection determination page where we publish that information. At the present time, it is not being updated on each application status, but we are working on, I think we mentioned a few different times in the webinar, that we're working to update that page or that list that everyone can go to and look at all applications. It's a complex web page, and we're trying to incorporate a number of changes that will better enable reporting and analysis and presentation of information that's relevant to the community.
So just – thank you, Christine. Just a quick follow-up if I can. So once an application has been rejected by a panelist or by a panel, does ICANN wait for that applicant to formally withdraw to get a refund, or does ICANN take an initiative to say, you've been rejected, here's your refund? What is there any specifics on that that you could share?
Sure. I'm comfortable stating that we don't initiate the refund on our own. The applicant does need to request, indicate that they are withdrawing their application, and that initiates the refund request. We don't do that for them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. I think we have one more question in the phone queue.
Our next question is from the line of Gordon Buchanan with Charleston Road Registry. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks a lot. So I actually have two questions. I think they're fairly short. Hopefully you'll bear with me. The first is on objections. I think in the presentation, it was noted that most of the community objections are still in process, which does, in fact, seem to be the case. But it's indicated that in most of the cases, this was because either extensions had been requested by the parties or the panelists, which I think is true from the panelists' perspective. But I know in many cases the decisions were submitted by the panelists sometime in the past but still haven't been made public. In one case, I know that there's the panelist submitted the decision over a month ago, and yet it still hasn't been resolved. So I'm wondering if you guys could provide any additional color about the prognosis on community objections, given that there seems to be a very significant lag time between panelists completing their findings and the actual results being made public.
Thanks, Jordan. Yes, I have some additional information to share. The ICC has I call it a QA process. The expert panel provides their determination to the ICC. It's the same process that they use for all of their determinations, not just for the ICANN new GTLD objections, but it's their standard review QA, QC process. And yes, we've inquired as to some of the timeliness or lack thereof of objection determinations, things we were anticipating would be complete by now. And we were told that this QA process typically takes a minimum, if things go smoothly, 4 weeks. And if there's any sort of back and forth with the expert panelists, it could take up to 8 weeks. So that is the other reason. I know we got a couple other questions on this. That's the other reason that we're not seeing the determinations from the ICC as rapidly as we anticipated. So even though the 45 days may be honored, or there may be some other extensions, it's this additional QA process after the fact that is adding to the timeline.
Thanks, Christine. That's helpful. And my other question briefly, just to make sure I understood what Russ said earlier about auction timing, it sounds like it's the case that regardless of the strings that would potentially be covered by the alternative path to delegation, you guys aren't going to proceed with auctions for any TLD until the mitigation plan has been completed for all of the TLDs in a potential contention set. Is that correct?
The current thinking was we would use the alternative path as the determining factor for eligibility. So once the alternative paths were published for each TLD, we'd proceed. But if there's community sentiment that they need the full mitigation plans before proceeding to auction, that's something we can consider.
Okay, thanks, Russ. And I just echo something you said earlier. I think it would be super helpful if there was some opportunity for dialogue and community feedback on auction planning prior to getting it published. So if you guys could figure out some sort of forum to do that, it would be incredibly helpful.
Sure. We'll do our best.
Yeah, Jordan, we recognize auctions are even more complex than I think we initially anticipated. Yeah, we have no intention of finalizing anything without a good review and input from the community. Do we have anyone else on the line? Okay. So we have, I'm being told that okay, we're working on extending the room to make sure we have an extra few minutes. We do have some questions that came in through the pod. Trang, are you prepared to facilitate the Q&A of the questions from the pod? Okay, so we'll we'll do that transition one more time on this end.
Thanks, Christine. The first question from the pod comes from Christina Rosette. With regard to community and limited public interest objections, what are the other factors that cause delay where the expert has not requested an extension and the parties did not request a stay? So I think you covered that. It was the same question that Jordan had. Question of objection from Andrew. If one of the parties in a community objection requested a stay, would the other affected party be notified? Is there any publication of expert panels requesting the time extensions? Yeah, I can answer that. Yes, in all instances, when there is a request for stay, all parties involved in that objection are notified. As to the questions about is there any publication of expert panels requesting time extensions, that is not information that the ICC make public. Next question, will ICANN provide a definitive list of all second-level strings that need to be reserved, similar to what they did for the IOC and Red Cross Crescent strings? The registry agreement references several external sources for the list of regular reserved names. One reference is that of a print UN document which isn't available electronically.
Yes, Trang, I can take that. This is Cyrus. So the answer to that is yes, we will be publishing a definitive list with the caveat that the list may actually be modified from time to time if there are other SLDs identified to be causing collision and harm post the activation. Back to you, Trang.
Hi, Trang. It's Krista. I just wanted to add to that. I think there's two questions wrapped into one here. One is about the name collision lists, and that's the one that Cyrus just answered for everybody. Those lists are unique per TLD, and will be published on the registry agreement page. The second part of that question, I think, was about where we have the reserve names listed on the ICANN website. We've listed the IOC and Red Cross reserve names. We've listed the IGO reserve names, and we've provided links to the other reserve names that link back to UN documents. And we don't have plans to publish a list of those. We plan to keep the list of those names that link to the UN pages the same.
Thanks, Krista. Next question from Alexander. When does the comment forum close for TODs and CPE, and how do you handle this technically? Would the string be removed from the pop-down menu, or how would that work?
So the application comment page does not close, and it does not become unavailable at any point. The way we handle it is that once the applicant is invited into community priority evaluation, we publish the those lists of invitations on the CPE page of the microsite, and as we've communicated previously, interested parties have 14 days after that invitation date to submit feedback either via the application comment forum or directly to ICANN as correspondents regarding that application. So after day 14, then the ICANN team makes that data available to the evaluation panel for community priority evaluation.
Next question from Christina Rosette about objections. Given that ICC has had most objection fees for at least 4 months, is it anticipated that the ICC will pay interest when it issues refunds to the prevailing party?
That is not anticipated, no. So we are still have the phone call live, but I know the Adobe room just had was closed down. We're working to restart it. So for everyone on the line, please bear with us.
Next question from Jasmine Omer. What is the process by which we obtain IBM's approval of our Sunrise and claims date as required to submit the TOD startup information?
So, Jasmine, I believe information was sent directly to ARI today from IBM. Dat Shevka inquired of that, and that information will be request for the Sunrise and claims dates will be submitted directly to IBM. I'll make sure that the email address or website address for submission of that information is in the Q&A document in follow-up to this. So, unfortunately, with the room shutting down, we have lost access to the chat pod. To the Q&A pod. So I do apologize for the shortness of this. Do we have any other questions from the phone? Okay. If you want to ask any questions via the phone, we'll continue to take questions for a few more minutes. I want to thank you all for participating today. It's been a busy month and an even busier week. Some exciting things are happening with the program completing our transition to delegation activities. I'm informed by the IANA team that all delegation steps have been completed, and we anticipate that delegation and the new route, updated route zone, will be distributed very shortly. Actually, I'm being told that the that this is imminent.
Pardon the interruption. We do have an audio question. Would you like to take it?
Yes, please.
Okay, we have an audio question from line of Brian Beckham with Validius. Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine. So we heard that ICANN plans to hold a webinar on auctions in the first week of November, and so presumably that shifts the previously expected deadline for the end of November for auctions. So I just wanted to ask the question to help applicants with planning if ICANN has a currently anticipated auction schedule.
Thank you, Brian. I'm going to turn that over to Russ.
Hi, Brian. No, at this time we do not have a auction schedule in terms of when specific auctions will be taking place. I think that's something I mentioned we wanted to talk through with the community during that webinar about overall scheduling philosophy.
So I would just add that the auctions will – we need to work through and finalize the auction rules. We need to publish the SLD lists, alternate path for all GTLDs, and then we will begin the invitation process. Or, well, I don't think it'll be invitation. Notification of intent to auction subsequent to that. So those notifications are likely, I think given the schedule, it's realistic not to expect those until end of November, probably December time frame, given what we know right now. That is subject to change.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
And I'm informed by the team here that the Route Zone file has been updated with our first four new GTLDs. So congratulations to all parties involved, especially to our four newest registry operators, ARI, Dat Shevka, Core Associates, and, sorry, Springfield. Congratulations to all and to everyone who has contributed so significantly to the development and implementation of this program. It's a significant milestone for the community and in the evolution of the Internet. Thank you all.